morning, everybody. This is Redfish Chuck calling on Monday, the 1st of August. Thanks for joining me again for another exciting evening of kayak fishing banter. Joining me tonight, hopefully here shortly on the phone, will be Rob, a bad backcast DeVore. And we're going to talk about, I think tonight's topic will be flounder fishing. Kind of a weird subject for the summertime, but definitely a fish that can be caught all year round here in the Space Coast of Florida and Central Florida in general. And all up and down the East Coast and West Coast of Florida all seasons long. Definitely a fun fish to encounter and pretty easy to catch as well. So without any further ado, let's try and get into it a little bit. I think what I'll start talking about first is some pretty easy tips and techniques and ways to find flounder even when it's a million degrees outside. You go out, you know, I typically go out from the Port Canaveral area and look for areas that might be a little bit deeper with a shelf somewhat near it. In other words, you find an area that's got some deep water and you can always kind of work your way into the shallows, if that makes any sense. Transitional areas where you might be fishing in, say, 10 or 12 foot of water, but within a couple of yards from where you're fishing, you've got a pretty good shelf that will lead up to, you know, as shallow as possible, maybe say 2 foot. Flounder tend to like to hang out in areas like that. And, you know, because they're an ambush predator, so that makes for an easy location for them to hang. And all right, I think I'm back. I had a phone issue. Sorry about that. Can anybody hear me? I don't have a chat up. I don't know what's going on tonight. I've got no callers on the switchboard. So I guess I'll just ramble until somebody chimes in. Anyway, I think I was saying that flounder are an ambush predator, and they like to hang out in transitional areas where they know bait's readily available. You know, some of their favorite baits are things like mud minnows, and we got mud minnows, finger mullet, shrimp, pretty much just about anything that's small that they can get their mouth on. Do I have Rob on the phone?
Yeah, man.
Dude, I don't know what happened.
I don't either. I think we both were logging in at the same time or something, and I kicked you out or something. I don't know. But anyway,
yeah,
sorry.
It's all right, man. It's
technical
cool. It's only
issues.
My second.
You gotta get that thing fired off by the time, you know, by 7:45, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't use my Skype. I don't know what happened. My Skype wasn't working. But anyway.
Yeah,
I'm
it
talking
takes a
about
few minutes to log in, so we'll get it. We'll get on it, man.
Anyway,
we'll get you fixed up.
Yeah, I'll figure it out. Anyway, so I'm talking about flounder tonight, and I was kind of stumbling because I wasn't really sure what was going on with Skype, and I probably sounded like an idiot, and I apologize for that, guys. But all that aside, let's dive back into it again. Rob, do you do much flounder fishing over there on the West Coast?
I don't usually target them, but I do. You know, in the springtime I do target them. Sand Key Pass, Clearwater Harbor is famous for them, so usually in the spring and in the fall, People were lined up at the north end of Sand Key Park there, fishing from shore, catching flounder. So it's a pretty good spot to do it. I usually catch them as a bycatch, you know. I'll be fishing flats or sandbars. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm looking for right there. But I'll catch them on flats or sandbars or something like that. And you know, usually with the DOA shrimp, just as a bycatch, you know.
Yeah, I you know what, man? It's funny. This year was different for me in the Mosquito Lagoon. I had caught a few flounder in the lagoon in years past, but just strictly as a bycatch. But this year, for whatever reason, it seemed that there was greater numbers of them in the south end of the lagoon than what I was normally accustomed to. And you could almost go out there and target the things, fishing the same way you'd fish the redfish, using soft plastics or live bait or even cut bait. So that was kind of neat for me to see that. You know, it's now a fishery that I know that in the future I can tap into whenever I need my flounder fix, for sure. But typically what I do is I fish in the deeper cuts over in Port Canaveral, or I run down towards Dee's location down there in Sebastian, and I'll fish down there a little bit. And the flounder run in Sebastian Inlet is one of those things that you just have to at least go once to check it out. It's definitely something to behold. Monster doormat flounder. I'm talking up to 10 and 12 pounds, sometimes even larger than that, are caught. Usually in the wintertime, those guys run through. But I'll tell you, the last couple of weeks down there in the intercoastal around the Spoil Islands in the southern end there of Brevard County, there's been quite a few really nice flounder caught fishing up around those Spoil Islands. So, I mean, fish averaging anywhere from 2 to 3 pounds, but of course, there's always the opportunity to pick up a few that are even bigger than that. I know a guy that just went down there a couple weeks ago, and he had caught two of them that were over 8 pounds. So that's pretty awesome. Have you ever really tried to target them? I mean, like, have you ever used strictly on the bottom to see if you can get them, Rob?
Absolutely, yeah. Usually when I'm fishing around in the spring, when it's still kind of cool out, the water temperature is kind of cool. I usually fish for them in Sand Key Pass there with everybody else, except I'm in the kayak, you know. So I'll go out, and usually the only difference in baits that I use from any other time is instead of using a quarter ounce DOA measles color, I'll use a half ounce, and it helps it get down a lot quicker. Or you can always use, you know, stuff a couple of more of the DOA weights in one of your regular quarter-ounce ones. That always works, too. But, you know, it helps get it down and keep it down because there's some pretty nasty current coming in through Clearwater Pass there.
And you know what's funny? I think one of the reasons why we can target them so well in Port Canaveral is because we have the lock system. And with the lock system pretty much stopping any kind of a real true tidal flow, we get a tide movement, but not a real true tidal flow. I think that holds them better, you know. I could tell you stories of when Hurricane Faye or Tropical Storm Faye came through and dumped rain on us for 6 or 7 days that there were times where the locks would get stuck open, or the port would just leave the locks open so that the water levels in the river could kind of even out, if for lack of a better term. And man, when they left those locks open, boy, those fish just absolutely went crazy. Everything was being caught that right then. I mean, guys are going out and catching 50 and 60 redfish in the morning and calling it a day just because their arms are tired, and then going and catching a limit of flounder, and you know, because the water just constantly was moving. So yeah, it was pretty crazy.
They just opened up the locks and left them open.
Yeah, they had to. See, what happened with Faye is it dumped so much water on our area.
Right. I remember that.
That the water level in the river got so high that we almost had water coming across the major roadways. So roadways like 528 that lead out to Port Canaveral, when Faye was still kind of hovering around and still blowing on us pretty good, we were actually having the swell or the chop from the river was actually crashing across the main roadway. And so they had to do something to relieve the river of all that extra water that had been dumped on it. So they just opened the locks and left them open for like 4 days. And
no kidding.
That much water running out of there was absolutely incredible, you know, because it's definitely a stagnant area of the river. As I have said before on other shows, the middle, I would call it the center section of the Indian River Lagoon, Banana River Lagoon, and that area there doesn't have a tide flow. We're not affected by a tide because we're so far away from a true inlet, say like Sebastian Inlet. So whenever those locks were held open, it was like a false tide that never stopped. If you can imagine fishing an outgoing tide for 4 or 5 days in a row, it never stopped.
Wow.
That's basically what it was like. So,
well,
yeah,
you know, every
pretty...
time I've ever been over there, it's funny. Any time I've ever been over there, I look at the tides, you know, because I'm just used to it. And, you know, I look it up on my phone, and it says, you know, like 0.2 feet, some, you know, whatever that measurement is, it's like 0.2. I'm like, what? That's not even as high. That's like 2 inches, you know, it's nothing. That's why I always thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, our tide movement is nothing. Sorry about that. Yeah, our tide movement over here is really nothing. I mean, a typical high tide might move a few feet. I'll tell you what, when we get a really good full moon and we get a real, like a flood tide, if you will, and the water
mm-hmm.
really up high. But so the flounder that are in the port, most of them are from the offshore wrecks and reefs. They kind of migrate their way into the port this time of year, and also in the wintertime. Springtime, they tend to move their way back out again. Summertime, they kind of creep back in. Fall, they creep back out, and then they come back in the dead of winter. And we actually have two species of flounder in the state of Florida. I don't know if you knew that. We've got a few species of flounder, but two main that people target, the Gulf flounder or three-spot flounder, which tends to be smaller. I mean, an average size three-spotter would be somewhere in the realm of maybe 12 to 18 inches. And then we have what I would consider a fluke or a winter flounder, which are the big doormat that everybody's always looking for. And, you know, those can grow up to 15, 16 pounds. I've got buddies that spearfish them offshore, and I've seen 15 and 16-pound flounder, and it's about the craziest thing you've ever seen. But I typically like to target the bigger ones. I try to stay away from the three-spotters because I have a general rule, and that's, you know, I'm pretty gentle with my redfish. I turn almost all of them loose. In fact, I've only killed one or taken one redfish in probably 6 years home for dinner. And that's not the case with flounder, however. Flounder are the unfortunate souls that when I catch them and they're legal, they die. So it's definitely a fish that I grew up eating, one of my favorite fish to eat, one of my favorite fish to target. And I've been catching flounder longer than I've been catching any other species. So I kind of know a lot about catching them, or at least I like to think that I do. But I'll tell you, my preferred method to catching flounder, especially in Port Canaveral, and especially the big ones, will be the for a few. Yeah, I see you, MILF Hunter. Especially the bigger ones, is a live finger mullet. Nothing beats a live finger mullet, in my opinion, for catching big flounder inshore, because it's a large bait. And a lot of other little critters that live around the jetties or live around the rocks or live out on the sand have a hard time getting one of those things down. So the longer that fish, that mullet's on the bottom and causing commotion and getting real frisky, the better chance you have of catching just a giant. Also, too, you don't see it very often in the summertime, but in the wintertime, we get really good-sized shrimp over here in our bait shops. The summertime shrimp, as we like to call them, are like ghost shrimp. They're so tiny, you could split them in half with a hook. And, yeah, I got you. And you can split them in half with a hook. But the winter shrimp is usually when you buy your hand picks and your jumbos. And if you
if you guys take a jumbo shrimp and hook them through the head on a jig head and run a real short leader. I like to run anywhere between 8 to 12 inches of leader, real, real short, and a real light jig head, just enough to get that shrimp down to the bottom, and a slide sinker if needed, if there is any water movement, and just kind of slide it along the bottom. I don't bounce it. I don't jig it. I just kind of real easy slide along the bottom, reel in the slack, slide along the bottom, reel in the slack, and just continue that process until you find them. And Captain Tyler, a.k.a. MILF Hunter, in the chat room there, he could probably vouch for the fact that Port Canaveral holds some stud flounder. And, you know, it's definitely a fishery that I think isn't hit very hard. I'm sure it will be now, but I can tell you that from experience that it's definitely something that you don't want to overlook any time of the year, summertime, springtime, because the water in the port's deep enough to hold them. But you ever use anything? You ever use shrimp on a jig head form, Rob?
Yeah, actually, I'll tell you, it's funny. I got a funny story. I had a girlfriend once. You can hit the rim shot there. But anyway, she'd never been fishing before, and she wanted to go. And so I'm like, you know. And I wasn't, at this point, I was like more of a bass fisherman than anything. And she's like, you know, we got to get something to bring home and eat. And I said, I don't know, you know, we'll see. So went out to this sandbar at Bel Air Causeway, and it's got to be like 10 years ago, and so we go out there, you know, I got a bucket of shrimp and, you know, a couple of tourist rigs, and, you know, went out at night, well, on the sandbar, well, you know, it's a deep cut right through the middle of the sandbar, and it, like, goes underneath a bridge, and it's a really kind of a cool place. It looks really fishy, and it dumps off into a nice little grass flat. Well, you know, we're out there, and it's probably autumn, if I remember correctly, and go out there and did that with the jig head, you know, just had a jig head on there. I had a jig. I'm like, I'm not going to change, you know, I'm not going to fix that. I'll just throw a piece of shrimp on there. I'll throw a shrimp on there and just toss it, right? Well, she all of a sudden has something, right? And she's like freaking out. Oh my God. Hands me the rod. You know, I pull it in and it's a 27 inch flounder.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh man, dude, that's gotta be like one of the nicest flounders I've seen, you know, around these parts anyway. And that was it. And it's that simple. They're not hard to catch. You know, where would you say that you'd find them at? You know, I would say, you know, probably sandy bottoms with current moving, because they're lazy. They like to sit on the bottom with their eyes sticking out, and anything comes within range, they grab it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. I've definitely learned a bit more about southern flounder as opposed to the ones that we catch up, where I used to catch up on Long Island as a kid in the Great South Bay. I'll tell you a real funny story about that a little bit later, but we were whenever I go flounder fishing here, I always look for areas that have some sort of structure near them, whether it be a jetty or a group of pylons or a seawall or boat docks, anything like that. Flounder tend to like to hang up somewhere close to structure. Yeah, they like sandy areas and lay down on the, you know, in the middle of a grass flat as well. But usually you'll find most of them hanging in and around the the structure there. Yeah, Chuck had issues today for sure. So anyways, I decided to target flounder down here the same way I targeted flounder up north, and that was trying to drift for him. And that's the only way you really fish them up there was when a tide would move. You just kind of get in line with the 50 or so other boats and get all your rigs ready and get all your bait ready and just kind of start making your drift and work in an area over. You might get two or three bites during your pass, and then you pick up and run back up. The fish would just kind of, you know, turn on for like 30 minutes or 40 minutes, and next thing you know, it's random. Just run around like a chicken with your head cut off and catch them. In between catching flounder and fluke and catching sea robins up north, which are those crazy little creatures that have little claws that crawl around the bottom down here that most people don't know what they are. We'd load the boat full of them, man, and usually just on a single tide change. So coming down here, I try to do the same thing. I try to get, work areas where there would be some water movement and work areas where I knew that I can just drift and not worry about too many snags and that kind of thing. And I found it wasn't being very productive. So I make a trip down to Sebastian Inlet one time, and there's this old guy I was telling Rob about earlier when before I had all my issues. I was telling Rob about the guy. The guy, his nickname was Flounder King, and rightfully so. This guy was probably in his 60s or 70s, and he would sit on the rock piles down there at Sebastian Inlet on the north side and just wait for the tide to change. When the tide would change, he'd always stand on the same rock. If he was on the north side, he stood on this one particular rock. If he was on the south side, he'd be on another, a different rock, but just one rock. He'd never change rocks. And I kind of got to talking to him a little bit. He could tell that I was having some problems. I was losing a lot of terminal tackle down there. I wasn't fishing in a kayak. I was just standing on the bank. But he kind of explained to me the ways of the land down here and kind of how to really go about targeting them. So he's the guy that kind of pushed me into using the real short leaders to keep your bait as close to the bottom as possible, to using small hooks as opposed to great big giant like a kale style hook or a big circle hook or something like that. And then also to use light lead. Don't use a whole lot of lead, because when that fish picks it up and wants to take off, then you can he won't feel the resistance of that weight and spit your bait out. So flash forward now, probably about 8 or 9 years, and I've caught hundreds of flounder now. And the port seems to be one of those places to where your best locations for finding the flounder are going to be around the North Jetty, around the South Jetty on the beach side, inside the basins that you're allowed to go into. We have three basins total that are within the port. The center turning basin and the cruise ship basin are the ones you're allowed to fish. In those basins, it's really good. It's real deep. You got a lot of structure in there that hold fish. And then back in towards the drawbridge and in towards the locks, you've got a lot more structure in there as well, i.e. being rocks, being the breakwater for the locks, and the drawbridge itself as being a natural or unnatural barrier for them to kind of just lay up against and ambush prey. So those are kind of the places that I like to hit. I mean, Sebastian Inlet seems to be so good because it's covered in rocks. So maybe there's something to that, Rob.
Yeah, you know, same thing with Sankey Pass. You know, that's a great place to catch them. And like I said, everybody and their mother shows up there on the jetty. Now, they've blocked off about half the jetty now, so you can't get out on the whole thing, only part of it. But along that rock jetty, at the bottom, it's a sand bottom, and it's got some rocks here or there, you know, little piecemeal stuff. But it's a great place to catch them. Now, when I do catch them up in Dunedin, it's usually there's no rocks involved. It's usually flat sand, no grass, not a whole lot of grass anyway. And looks like Chip is coming on the line there. But yeah, I've always associated flounder with sand or some sort of a soft bottom anyway. Anytime I've ever found them, it seems that that's one of the ingredients that you need.
Chip, we got you?
Yeah, I'm here.
How's it going tonight, Chip?
Good, man. How's it going with you guys?
It was a rough start, but we're doing good.
All right, keep going, man. I'm listening.
All right, cool. So, well, that's cool, Rob. Real quick, let me just dive into this real fast. The rules from FWC on Florida in Florida for keeping flounder. Flounder have to be 12 inches in length. I believe that's the same on both coasts. And you're allowed 10 fish per harvester. So, you know, do the math. You got four guys you're fishing with. That's 40 fish. That's a lot of fish. Try and keep what you're just going to eat fresh. I know it's a bag limit and you're legally allowed to do it, but I don't know. Sometimes I just don't see the need in killing more than what you're actually going to eat fresh. And you can freeze fish. I know a lot of people that do it, but I don't know. Try and conserve that fishery for the future children. But yeah, so fishing for flounder in the intercoastals and stuff is a little bit more tricky. I know a few guys that have tried to do it and really try and target them. But I'll tell you what, man, I really want to get into doing some flounder gigging. That's something that I've been wanting to do for a long time. And, you know, I just haven't had an opportunity to do it yet. I think that I could probably figure out a way to rig my my wife's Native Ultimate with some lights on the bow of it so I can stand up in it. And maybe I can pull off a few flounder gigging trips with that. I don't know. You ever do any flounder gigging? Yeah, absolutely. You go out on the grass flats and go out on the sandbars and stuff at night, and you just have lights that you can use. Submersible lights are even better than the ones that just kind of hover above it because you don't have to worry about the glare. But you just kind of drift across the grass flat, and you know, you'll see the little eyes glowing at you. They'll be laying down in the sand and everything. You just stick them with a gig.
Yeah, buddy.
And you know what? After you play the banjo music, and after you get your few flounder in the boat, you pop one of these, and you know, kick back with your buddies, and maybe play a little bit more banjo music. No, but I just think that would be a fun kind of thing to do out of a kayak. I don't know of very many guys that have done it out of a kayak. I got buddies that have done it from ginus and canoes and stuff, but you know,
put your high powered headlamp on. You know, sounds like a blast.
Yeah, sounds like fun. Mark, do you catch a lot of flounder where you're at?
Oh, that's me. Oh, yeah, man. Catch. You can go out at any given time and catch 30 or 40 flounder well over 12 inches up here.
Is that the landing crew?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, how you
man,
doing, man?
So. Licking my wounds. That's what I'm doing right now.
Let me just specify here, Chuck. I don't know if you know or not, but the landing crew woke up this morning. I woke up this morning. We got to get some blues music going for this guy, man. But anyway, woke up this morning and found out somebody broke in his house and stole, you know, his wallet, keys, purse. He had a very nice purse there, Mark, by the way. And
yeah, he's got a coach bag, and fishing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Hey, Clevis. That's right, man. But, yeah, so, and this is the worst part, stole the fishing gear, okay?
Oh, man.
So the landing crew's collection of miniature Bass Pro Shops in the back of his truck is no longer.
They got everything, Mark?
Everything. I'm left with two spinning rods, my one surf rod, and a box of assorted crap plastic.
Oh, my God.
Well,
yeah.
So what we need to do is we need to organize if you got any sort of extra fishing gear, and you'd like to donate to the landing crew. I tell you what, I got an ugly stick that I can and it's in good shape. It's not a piece of garbage or anything. I love those things. I'll donate that to the landing crew fishing fund. If we're going to have one of those, so we'll have to talk about that later.
I got a sweet Depco 404. I can throw in there.
Woo. Now we're talking some money.
Yeah, baby.
And we're looking right under 20 G's worth of fishing gear gone.
Wow.
So we gotta. I just wanted to put the word out, and we'll talk about it later and everything. I'm not trying to ruin Chuck's show or anything like that, but we'll talk about that later, dude. And you shoot me your address, Mark. I'll send that ugly stick up to you, buddy.
It's okay, man. It's okay.
I'll do it, man. Send it up. Fire it down, man. That way you can get out there.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a lapse in fishing or nothing.
karma. Karma, man. That's all you gotta know. Some dude's gonna go to
use
your stuff and probably get struck by lightning on his first cast.
Did you have anything that was marked that we can put the word out so if anybody sees it, you know, we can catch the dastardly individual?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I've got my custom rods. I've got a bunch of guys that I fish with that are looking out for that stuff. The pawn shops know. I stopped by every last pawn shop, every last tackle shop today. And after I had to get duplicate keys because they stole my keys to both vehicles.
Oh my God.
Hey,
that's how you know it's some punk. You know, why would they steal your damn keys?
To get in my car to get my fishing gear.
Yeah, and pass the word, too, that this came out of a Marine's stuff. So.
Yeah. Well, they got my custom Marine Corps rod, man.
No way.
Okay, sees that rod.
I never use this rod. And I put it in my truck to show my one coworker, because he's starting to get into custom rod building. You know, we're talking, you know, the challenge coin was inlaid into the butt. And then it was a cord wrapped with, navy blue for 3rd Battalion, red for 1st Battalion, and gold for 2nd Battalion. So I built it originally for a drill instructor who unfortunately passed away. And so I kept it. I mean, Marine Corps out the whole way up, you know, from eyeballs to toes. And, that's gone, too. So that's got me more pissed off than anything else.
May the ghost of Tom Fuller haunt the stupid son of a gun.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with people stealing fishing gear, man. That's definitely not right.
Well, it's these crackheads, man. You know, crack and meth, whatever else. Oh, trust me, if I wasn't dead to the wind because I was so tired, it would be a different story. You know, I'd be calling you guys from Virginia Beach Prison, hey, y'all, I'm sorry. I won't be back out for 20 years.
But, dude, we'll take it. I'll donate some, gear your way, man. Definitely. I mean, I don't have a whole lot, but, dude, what little I got to spare,
you know what it is?
I'd be more than glad to shoot it up to you.
I'm looking at it like this. They came in my house when I was asleep. I am thinking all that is good, that they only took what they did and didn't decide to come upstairs. So I have my two kids with me, my wife was on duty, it's stuff that can be replaced, And granted, the sentimental value is gone, but, if I can just get, one or two of the custom rods back and my, and maybe one reel, I'd be good. I'd be kosher. And hopefully the insurance company decides to send me some money and to help rebuild it. But, the only reason I didn't get my kayak off the top of my truck was because I had a combination tire or a bike whammy dying thing hooked up to it. It's the only reason I didn't get the kayak. So,
that's good, man.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, bro. That's horrible, man. And there's nothing to me worse than a thief. A thief, if a guy can steal from you, he could do anything. That's the way I look at it.
Oh yeah.
So.
Oh yeah.
But I think we should definitely do that. Put together the collection for Mark and just send him a whole pile of crap. He wouldn't even know what to do with himself. That'd be awesome.
No, guys, please don't. I don't need that. Just talking about
he needs
right now
posters
too.
Give him some posters.
Oh, I got banners. Man. We'll make your garage look like a tackle shop.
Like Joe Clark would say, you smoke crack, don't you?
No. All right.
That was good. Anyways, so check this out. To change the subject so we're not so dreary for the rest of the night.
Sorry,
really sorry to hear that, Mark. I convinced a couple of my buddies who are offshore charter captains out of Port Canaveral to consider doing mothership trips off of Port Canaveral. So
If anybody is interested in coming down to the Space Coast and putting your boat into a giant boat and being towed offshore to, you know, 200-plus foot of water or 100 foot of water, wherever the endangered red snappers are hanging out, and amberjacks and groupers and other said creatures, the fee for a trip like that would be no different than the fee if you were just going to hire them to take you bottom fishing or trolling. So, you know, even with the extra use of the mate to help you get the boats in and out and all the extra rigging that would be required to, you know, safely strap these things down, the guys were telling me, look, just things have been so slow lately that they would just do the trip for the normal fee. And normal fee is depending upon who you talk to, is anywhere between $750 or $800 for a full day. That's for six people. So if you split that six ways, it's really not that bad. To be able to get out there, that's pretty good, man. Yeah, that's what I was telling my buddies, and I was like, you know, there's a lot of guys that want to go out and do what the guys down in South Florida have the ability to do just off the beach, and obviously we got a 20-mile run to hit 100 foot of water, so none of us are going to paddle out there and do any vertical jigging, so to speak. There's no vertical jigging really to be done off of my coast until you get down south. You can catch kingfish now and again, but to really kind of go out and target the bottom fish. And these particular captains that I'm referring to, I'm going to get those guys on the horn here probably next week or the week after, are two of probably the best bottom fishing captains that I know out of the port. So definitely guys that would put you on fish and you know, just, and they're just good guys, man. If I was going to hire anybody to take me fishing, these would be the two dudes I'd probably do it with offshore, so. But, yeah, I thought that was pretty neat. And then also, too, I've got a friend of mine who we were just talking to and today in the shop, and he runs manatee tours. Sounds really exciting, doesn't it? And I was telling him, I said, well, how big is the pontoon boat you're putting these people on? He's like, it's like 25 foot. And I said, dude, do you have a pontoon boat that's sitting around, doesn't have any bench seats in it, like just the deck and maybe a top on it? And he's like, yeah, as a matter of fact, the owner's got one. And I said, awesome. So I convinced him to talk to his boss and see if he could do mothership trips in parts of the river that you couldn't paddle to and couldn't launch close enough to get to, areas like the Thousand Island and down, say down towards the no motor zone, but on the east side, and you know, maybe up into the lagoon if they get the permitting correct and are able to do that, put you up in areas where, I mean, it would be a 3 or 4 or 5 mile paddle just to get there. So definitely some cool things happening over here on the Space Coast. And you know, I think that I think more charter captains should kind of think about that. You know, it's definitely something that I know I'm interested in doing. I'd love to have a boat to be able to throw my boat in and just run it down the river to a spot where I couldn't paddle to. I do happen to know an inshore guide who's in the chat room who has never offered to take me on a mothership trip, but maybe that will happen soon. And, you know, I just think that that's something that would be pretty cool, you know, being able to get out there on the ocean. What do you guys think about that?
Heck yeah. Where's Dania Beach at? Dania? Anybody know?
Dania Beach, I think that's up in the Panhandle, isn't it?
Potty Mouth on Yak Angler wrote a real nice piece about speed jigging on Yak Angler today.
That's down south.
I'm not sure exactly where it was, but he was in his kayak and he didn't have a Hobie either, and he was out there catching amberjacks and all sorts of nice stuff. So
That's down in South Florida. I'm sorry, Rob. That's down around Fort Lauderdale and that kind of thing. And those guys are lucky.
Pardon my geographical faux pas there. I should know where that is. You know, I live in Florida.
I didn't know where. I thought it was in the Panhandle until you told me who it was. But you know what, man? Those guys are lucky. They paddle a mile off the beach and they're in the Gulf Stream. So it's definitely... It's a totally different world down there than what we have up here. And
I noticed that in yakangler.com, and if you guys are not familiar with yakangler.com, you need to be. Get on there and check out the goings-ons. There's always good reports, and there's always good articles that are being posted. We've got some really good members that are on there that are full of information. We've got members from all over the United States. I think we've got a few out in Hawaii, too.
Don't forget
England.
The UK.
Australia.
Australia, yeah.
So all over the world, you know, Yak Anglers, it's really growing. Mark and Adam do a really good job with that thing, and you know,
Africa.
I'm proud to be a part of Africa. Yeah, really, I'm proud to be a part
Seriously.
Of. No, I know. I'm proud to be a part of Yak Angler, and I know some of the guys who host shows here are as well. But you know, I think that. Those guys down there in South Florida, I really don't think they know how good they have it. I saw that article that he had posted, and I saw that Fishing Chicks, I think is her name, up in Daytona Beach, was asking a question about how she can go offshore and where she can go to do some bottom fishing or jigging, that kind of thing, or even trolling. And we really don't have that that available to us here as far as the bigger bottom species. Like your amberjacks, your big groupers, and that kind of thing, and especially not any sort of a tuna species anywhere close to the beach. It just by the way of our coastline, and I think it's one of the reasons why we don't get the hurricanes to abuse us quite as bad as they do down in South Florida, is our Gulf Stream is located so far offshore. Plus, it makes a major bend out to the east, right off our coast. So, you know, when you paddle 2 miles, 3 miles off the beach, that's a long way to paddle out in the ocean. You're still only sitting in 25, 30 feet of water, 40 foot the deepest. And to find a rock pile or to find a reef that's along that stretch is almost impossible. It doesn't matter what kind of side scanning sonar you have or hummingbird or whatever you got. It's so scattered out there, you wouldn't be able to find anything. But I definitely want to make a trip down there as well. And down, like I said on my first show, down to Fort Pierce to do some of the lobstering. But not just that, do some of the fishing down there. I think that would just be awesome, you know. But I've got a buddy that actually launched up at Playlinda Beach, which for those of you that don't know where Playlinda Beach is, it's located on the other side of Mosquito Lagoon down in the south end. So if you were to drive out towards Mosquito Lagoon, go around the south end of the lagoon, there's a beach out there called Playlinda Beach, and it's actually really, really pretty beach. It's part of the Canaveral National Seashore, and when the shuttles were going up, you could see the launch pads, and when the shuttle was sitting on the launch pad, that's the closest you can come legally to seeing the shuttle on the pad would be from Playlinda Beach. But anyway, he launched his kayak up there at Playlinda, and he's one of the first guys that I know of that have done it. And he was basically chased off the water by sharks. He said that he got out past the breakers and he had never seen that many sharks ever in one spot before. So a little hair-raising episode for him, but definitely an area that should be explored. I'll tell you what, for those of you guys that are brave, there's a barge that's located just off the beach at the very far end of Playlinda Beach. It's a good 3 mile walk. So I don't know how you'd make it up there and back unless you had a really nice cart or something like that. But I heard that barge holds just about everything that can be caught off the beach all year round. So pretty interesting.
How deep?
It's right in. It's like right there in the trough, right there in the first trough of the beach. So it starts in ankle deep water and it goes out to about 15, 20 foot of water. I know some guys that have spearfished around it for like giant sheephead and bait fish, mangrove snappers. There's usually flounder around it. I know certain times of the year, huge schools of big bull reds will get around it, black drum. I know some snook wander up that way. And this time of year, you'll find a few big tarpon up there as well. So, you know, definitely a bunch of different things to explore up there. But like I say, that's a 3 mile jaunt to the north, and there's no access close to it, any closer than that 3 mile walk. So. That would definitely be like an all-day event and definitely not for the faint of heart. So. But, completely off track of my original topic tonight of flounder, but that's okay. just kind of go with it as we go, and, you know, I'm going to get better at this thing as we go along. So, Chip, did you do any fishing over the weekend? Chip?
Here I am. No, I didn't get around. Dude, it's just way too hot here. I mean, if it's 92, yeah, it's just, you got to be out at like zero dark 30, and most of the impounds around here, they're controlled by the local sheriffs and stuff. You can't get in. You can't. They're local water authority impounds, so you can only hit them from dawn to dusk. So, and they'll give you a ticket in a heartbeat if they catch you out there before or after. So, by the time the sun comes up, they're wide open. So the sun is just beating down on you out there. So, there's nothing. There's no good fishing right now. Most everybody's off. Unless you're a tuber with a cooler, you know, you're not on the water. So,
well, you know, like I always say, Chip, you know, fishing can be hard sometimes. And that's why I like to use my Omni-shaped shirt from Columbia. Because
oh,
it helps make fishing a whole lot easier.
Yeah, dude, I got all that gear, but it don't do any good to get out there. I can fish in my pool just as well as I can in the ponds around here right now. So, but we are planning on hitting the beach here pretty soon. We've got our annual meeting from Georgia Kayak Fishing coming up in 2 weekends. So we're gonna probably be able to fish a little bit early there on the Lanier.
Oh,
no,
cool.
No, we're doing it at Lanier this year. And then, let's see, what else? We're coming up here. We're not too far off. We're going to open up voting next week for Angler's Choice, Kayak Angler's Choice Awards for the year. And the event that everyone is looking for is the Chuckdown Boondoggle. It's not too far off now. We're getting close.
Yeah, I'm excited about that, man.
Yeah, I wish that was one of those things that I wish I could make it to, but, yeah, it's not going to happen for me this year. I think we should try and definitely work something out for the fall/winter time down in South Florida or somewhere down here. I know that I keep bringing you guys back down here, but it is the fishing capital of the world after all. So, but
I love fishing Lagoon, Chuck, anytime, man. You kidding me? But, yeah, I'm definitely planning on getting over there with Inshore Keith and some other folks, and maybe you can hook us up out there, Chuck, because we're waiting for the weather to get a little cooler because, you know, it's kind of a long trip for me for just going out there for 4 hours worth of fishing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But I'll tell you what, something I've noticed lately, and the MILF Hunter 1 can back me up on this. I've been looking at some of his pictures on Facebook and stuff, and that guy, let me tell you what, I wish he'd call in so we can get him to do a little bit of self-promotion for his guide service. But he's been putting his clients on some nice redfish, some biggins first thing in the morning, and I see there in the chat room he's talking about drinking a lot of water, and I can't agree with him enough. That's something that I think that most of us just kind of put it off, or we might grab, say, a bottle or two of water and throw it in a cooler and call it good. But when it's 100 degrees outside and you're sitting in a plastic boat, you're not getting a breeze on your face or anything like that, you definitely need to have more water than that. I mean, I'll suck down a gallon of water in the first 45 minutes of being on the water. So, and I'm guilty of it too, not bringing enough water with me.
You can't just do water, Chuck, though. And if anybody would like to know and read my article on badbackcast.com about staying hydrated, you got to throw some Gatorade or some sort of sport drink in there, too.
Gatorade!
Not Propel or anything like that, but otherwise you can basically wash all of the essential nutrients out of your body that you need out there when you're paddling a kayak in 100-degree heat.
Yeah,
so
no, I always
drink a lot of water. I don't have a Yeti cooler like you do, Chuck. But I definitely take many Nalgene bottles full of water and Gatorade.
Yeah, I always have a Gatorade bottle with me, and my flavor of choice as of late has been one of the Fierce brand, or the Fierce flavors, like a Fierce orange or something like that. It's really good. But anyway, yeah, of course, got to support Gatorade, man. That they came from University of Florida, go Gators. And I'll tell you what, I've seen guys come off the water before and just been ill. And I think one of us, didn't one of the guys get sick? Or feel
yeah, it was me.
Right. We were coming off the water.
I got
pretty
dehydrated
really
out there.
Yeah, so, you know, definitely try and do the best you can to keep yourself covered up from the sun. I always wear a long sleeve cotton shirt. I know it sounds crazy. I don't care if it's 1,000 degrees outside. I wear a long sleeve cotton shirt at all times. I wear a buff. I wear a ball cap. A good pair of sunglasses will keep some of that sun out of your eyes and off parts of your face that the buff can't cover. You know, and then I haven't gone so far as to going with the buff gloves yet as far as trying to use them on a full day. But you know what, man, I got to cover myself up. And it's not like I'm not quite as invincible as I think I was when I was younger. And I got Steve Roberts there in the chat room. And Steve is my fishing buddy going back to junior high school. And, you know, me and him, we used to go down and we'll fish Sebastian Inlet from sun up till sundown. And I don't think either one of us ever wore sunscreen. So it's definitely something to think about, especially in these hot months down here in Florida and anywhere, really. It's making sure you're covered up, you're well hydrated, and, you know, just take care of yourself. Think about yourself first. Don't worry about catching fish. If you go out and catch the biggest trout of your life or go out and catch the most redfish you've ever seen and you can't make it back home to tell anybody about it because you had a heat stroke in your car before you were able to make it home, then what good was it, right? So definitely something to think about. But we're nearing our hour mark. 8:55. I think I'm gonna try and keep it going a little bit longer if that's right with you, Chip. Just a few minutes longer because I kind of stumbled there in the beginning.
You got 2 hours, dude. Knock it out.
Yeah, I'm not going 2 hours. I can assure you that. But anyway, so for guys that are new to the sport. And just trying to get into it, or maybe you've just got into it and you're trying to figure out what kind of items you should buy to kind of help protect yourself. As Rob had mentioned, the starter shirt, I believe it was. Did you say starter, Rob?
Yeah, the people laugh, but the starter Dri-Star compression shirts, man, the long sleeves, those things are awesome. Okay, and they're great. And now, I'm sorry, I'm not built like Michael Vick or anything like that, so I can't wear one of those, just one of those. I got to wear, like, a shirt over top of it or something, you know, or else I'll scare the fish and everybody at the beach and everything else. So, but I'm telling you, those things are worth their weight in gold because, and you got, they're going to be tight. So the rule is if you wear a large, get an extra large. If you wear a medium, get a large because they're going to be really super snug on you, man. And, you get one of those, either the light gray or the white, and I'm telling you, man, it sucks. It wicks the sweat off of you, and it dries ultra fast, man. And it feels like I'm wearing air conditioning when I wear that thing. And I got to say, after wearing microfibers and all that stuff, I'll go with one of those long sleeve compression shirts any day of the week, man. Those things are awesome.
Yeah, I've seen a few. I noticed that a lot more manufacturers are starting to make those shirts, performance-based shirts, sort of those wicking material kind of shirts.
Yeah,
I'm definitely
a fan. And they're
cheap.
$10. They're $10 at Walmart, man.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of inexpensive, and it's probably one of the reasons why I wear so many cotton shirts is because working in the tackle shop, I tend to get a lot of freebie shirts thrown at me, and for whatever reason, manufacturers don't like to make short sleeve shirts. They always make long sleeve shirts, which I'm cool with. It works out, but you know, it's definitely something to think about, man. I tell you what, my feet get roasted every summer. The tops of my legs and my feet will get really, really bad roasted, and you know, I usually get two or three of those bad instances before I realize that maybe I should cover up a little bit more and wear some kind of water shoes or something like that to kind of cover my feet. And as far as pants,
you don't wear
those,
shoes in the summer?
No, man, I don't even own a pair of shoes. I got one pair of shoes I think I own, and everything else is flip-flops. Reefs, by the way, most comfortable flip-flops on the market. And I'll tell you, as far as pants go, I haven't found a company, with the exception of Columbia, that makes a really comfortable pair of fishing pants that are not like $60. So if anybody has any info on that, feel free to hit me on Facebook or send me an email or something with some information.
Chuck. And Chip can back me up on this. He might be able to tell you a little bit more info. Really super lightweight pants that are fast drying. Camp Moore has them. If you go to campmoore.com, campmoore.com, that place has great deals, man. I saw, I'm like currently shopping for shoes, and I saw some Columbia drain makers for like, you know, like $20 less than retail. So that's cool. But I'm not sure exactly what brand Chip got from Camp Moore. But they're pretty nice, man. You can actually, they have like little ties at the ankles. You can make them look like capris, man, if you wanted to.
They were Kokatats. I got them on sale for like, they were like $28, man. They were on sale at Camp Moore. Go on and off every now and then. You have to check it out, but they're pretty sweet. They dry out real quick, and they're real long too, so you can actually pull them down over your feet, man, if your feet start getting burnt, like marks.
Oh, nice.
With little dots.
Oh, man. For those of you who don't know, we were at the lagoon for the President's Day boondoggle earlier this year, and the landing crew there, man, dude had all the bug spray in the world on, but no sunscreen. And that dude was redder than the redfish that we caught, man. And he was wearing Crocs. And, you know, the holes, he had, like, dots on his feet, sunburned dots from the Crocs, man. So that was one of those things. You don't want to be like that, man.
Yeah,
definitely
that was
cover up
pretty
in
awesome.
The summertime.
That was definitely
that was,
kind of one
great.
Of the funnier things. Yeah, it was one of the funnier things from the whole experience, I think, was how red Mark got. Looked almost like a cooked lobster. But, yeah,
that was
it was
bad.
Pretty bad, wasn't it, buddy? But I'll tell you what. I just think that's something that isn't talked about enough, and it really needs to be driven home. I know on most of these, radio shows and most of the forum boards and stuff guys go to, I know that guys tend to just talk about fishing, and, you know, fishing reports and fishing techniques and fishing this and fishing that. But, man, try and be as conscious about taking care of yourself out there as you can, and your buddy as well, whoever your fishing buddy might be. You know, if your fishing partner shows up and he's not prepared for the day's adventures, you know, carry some extra stuff with you just in case. I know I've fished with a couple of guys that basically show up wearing a pair of shorts, a tank top, and maybe a hat. And to fish the lagoon or to fish the rivers or anywhere you fish, especially here in Florida, for a full day and not be prepared, it makes for a very bad outing. And usually your fishing partner will be down and out for more time than what you think. So, but anyway... anybody planning to fish this week at all? Rob, Mark, Chip, anybody?
Kitten?
You're going to have a hurricane on you on Saturday, man.
Yeah, no, I saw
now,
that. But the weather
is
actually really nice leading to it. Yeah, Emily.
Is it going north or south of Cuba as far as the spaghetti models showing right now? Do you know?
The center of the track is just to the northeast corner, going right through the middle of the Dominican Republic. So,
well, when they go south of Cuba is when I get worried, because they can end up in the Gulf, and usually all of the ones that have come near us here in the Tampa Bay area go south of Cuba. So I'm kind of that's usually the when I see the track going south of Cuba, which usually puts it right on the west coast of Florida. That's when I'm getting all my hurricane stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, listen, it doesn't bother me at all to see one coming. Yeah, I'll be getting drunk this weekend. Hopefully, Steve, you'll call me. I'll tell you what, man, there's nothing like fishing Port Canaveral after a storm or right before a storm. And for those of you guys that like to catch snapper, it would be worth the trip to come down. I've never seen anything like it after a major storm blows through. Mutton snapper invade Port Canaveral after a storm has blown through and right before a storm goes through. I don't know if it's because they just don't like the turbulence offshore or what the case may be, but, man, we have gotten out there and we have absolutely crushed them, and keepers too, which is kind of crazy because a keeper mutton snapper, I believe, is 16 or 18 inches, which is a good-sized fish. So definitely something to target out there and something that you don't typically see in Port Canaveral, which would be keeper muttons. You catch a lot of smaller ones, but you don't get very many of the keepers. So definitely something to try and look forward to doing. And also, too, something else that works out real well, too, is lobsters. Lobsters get pushed in closer and closer to the beach. I see that some guys are a little hesitant to get out right after a big storm goes by. But, man, my buddy went right after Faye. The water was filthy, but he had just enough vis to be able to see the ledge, and he was getting his limits of lobsters every time he went for, like, 2, 3, 4 days in a row, just crushing the thing.
Well, I know that.
I
know, Chuck, right before a hurricane, not when you're out, not when the waves are coming in and all that stuff, like the day before it gets like that, I would say probably like 36 hours before, you know, before the wind starts picking up and all the waves start getting nasty, fish get on the feed. So, get your plywood out, get all your stuff taken care of early, and then get out there and get out there and chase some fish, man. Cause there's something, the fish know it's coming. It's some sort of a thing in the barometric pressure or something. Right before that, they'll get on the feed, man. It's just like fish right before a cold front, man. You can find some really good fishing right before a storm, buddy.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, man. After the storm is pushed through and everyone gets the hominis dominus, it's okay to go out back outside. The world has not ended and everything else. Fishing the culvert pipes that litter this entire area over here, and I don't know if you have any over there, Rob, but fishing just outside any of the culvert pipes you find is money. I mean, it could be some of the best fishing you do all year round because we have so many saltwater estuaries that are blocked off by culvert pipes. They like to call them mosquito control areas, which I don't know exactly how they're controlling the mosquito population up on Mosquito Lagoon, but we'll just go with it. But yeah, definitely
no mosquitoes out there.
Yeah, right. Definitely something to think about. Definitely some fishing opportunities to be had after a storm pushes through like that. And no matter how dirty the water is, no matter how churned up it is, or how much garbage is in the river that has been blown off the bank or whatever, those fish still feed. And your scented baits tend to be your big producers, your gulp, blurp from Bass Assassin, your DOA has got the impregnated scent as well. So, you know, any kind of scented bait works real well during those times when the water's super, super dirty. Or noisy topwater baits work real well, too, around those storm pipes, those storm drains and stuff. So, but, Rob, are you going to fish all before the storm comes?
Yes, I will be out this week. I'm planning on going. Hello? You still there? Who's ringing?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on?
Who's this?
I don't know. Who is this?
Oh, it's Mark. So I'm getting the big guns out and making sure everything is ready to go. My buddy Keith got a kayak that he can actually go offshore in. So he's more excited about that, and I don't have to worry about his having to tow back him and his sit inside kayak anymore. Going offshore right early.
All right. Well, yeah. So now that we've covered flounder, I think we've covered on the water safety. I think we've covered storms coming and what to do and what not to do, and you know, a little bit of everything tonight. I kind of got a little bit off track, but you know, it was a good conversation. I appreciate everybody listening. As always, it's fun to be on this radio show and to bring some information to you guys. I hope that I hope you guys can learn something from it. And if you have any questions, please feel free to send me an email. My email is chuckskayakadventures@hotmail.com. You can check out my website. It's chuckskayakadventures.com. Definitely go to Yak Angler. Check out yakangler.com. If you guys aren't members, become members. Get active in the forums. Get active sending in articles and reviews. And that's something that we should definitely touch on is Mark and Adam from Yak Angler give you guys a really cool opportunity to kind of become an outdoor writer, so to speak, and that's by sharing your articles and your reviews with the rest of the world, apparently, since we've got people all over the world reading yakangler.com now. So definitely check that out. And, you know, just like I say, be safe out there and take care of yourselves, take care of your buddies. Make sure you're wearing your life vest while you're out there. Steve, give me a call after the show, and we'll set something up. Guys, I really appreciate you guys listening, as always. We'll do it again next Monday. 8 o'clock Eastern. Again, I'm Chuck, Redfish Chuck Levi. I appreciate everyone listening in. Check out the podcast if you didn't catch the whole show. And I look forward to talking to you guys later on. And to my boys, Trey and Logan, good night, guys. Love you.